what people are talking about.
Let me hit you with some knowledge.
This is TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
With one on the play clock, they get it away. Here comes the blitz. Rivers hit as he throws, delivers, and throws over the middle. 40, 35, 30, 25, to the sideline. 10, 5, lightning bug. Touchdown, San Diego, 57 yards.
Antonio Holmes in motion from left to right. Sanchez back to throw, looks right, throws a slant right. Caught by Holmes at the 30, splits the defense. He's at the 20, right sideline, 10, 5, touchdown. Santonio Holmes, 41 yards out.
A ball in motion, 6. Tosses it out, and picking it up is McCoy, and McCoy, 25-30, 25-20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown! Katie McCoy!
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, the big holiday weekend headliner in the NFC, the Packers and Falcons.
Are the Jaguars that good? Can the New York Giants hang on? And what's next in Minnesota?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. Another eventful week, Hub, in the NFL. I mean, this league is not lacking for interesting storylines or drama. Senior editor Eric Edholm joins us up in Minnesota. The inevitable happened after the Packers hammered the Vikings like never before in the Metrodome. Chili is out. Les Frazier is in as head coach.
I think it's an interesting situation, guys, because had they not beaten Arizona 2 weeks ago in thrilling comeback fashion, I think we would have had this story about 2 weeks ago. At least that's what my sources are telling me up in Minnesota. And in retrospect, they wish that win didn't happen so that they give a little more time to Frazier to see, you know, kind of like in Dallas with Jason Garrett, can this guy be our future head coach? What can he do from here to kind of amp up the enthusiasm, get something out of this last six games?
Yeah, but Eric, here's the piece I don't understand. Had the move been made after the win versus Arizona, which it was still, you know, clearly dictated, they might still be my Super Bowl pick. And what was Will thinking, saying, I'm going to stick with this horrible situation through the two most important games of the year and then make the move?
I think he felt, because of the enthusiasm that was in the locker room, Brett had one of his biggest games, 446 yards passing. You know, it was the first time they'd really shown any spirit this season. They thought, we can't mess with the chemistry right now. But 2 weeks later, after two division losses, I think they realized, okay, we got to pull the trigger now.
You know, guys, this is a team that they've got a lot of free agents coming up, potential free agents, that type of thing. It's an older football team. This was kind of their shot, wasn't it, Eric?
I think so. I mean, like you said, there are probably three or four key guys they'd like to get back, you know, Sidney Rice, Greenway, Ray Edwards, and it's going to be tough to say what direction do they go at quarterback. That's obviously a huge decision in the offseason. So a lot of change in the air, and I think it starts with Leslie Frazier in that roster.
Another one of your teams, the New York Giants, big problems at wide receiver. They're going to be out without Steve Smith and Akeem Nicks for, well, the next couple of weeks at least. And Eli Manning, unlike his brother, is not the kind of guy that can take just backups and make them into starters, legitimate starters. Is that the case?
I think that's so true. You look at the beginning of last year, there were a lot of questions about this receiver group, and it ended up being one of the strengths of the team. We saw what Smith could do as a third down guy, a great chain mover, a security blanket for Manning. When he was out last week, it was obvious. You know, Hakeem Nicks may be the quote-unquote number one guy, but Nicks can't do it by himself, and now he's out with a leg injury. So, you know, they're going to rely on Mario Manningham, who's probably best in that number three role. Ramsey's Barden was coming on. He's on IR. Victor Cruz, the preseason star, he's out for the season. So many injuries here. They had to sign Michael Clayton, for the former Buck. And, you know, who knows what he can contribute at this point. So the next few weeks, it's going to be really on Eli in the running game to find other ways to score.
Well, Eli, the running game and that defense, which has got to play better than they did last week against the Eagles.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the defensive line has got to take the onus of creating that pressure they did early in the season. It just hasn't been there quite as late, even as much as they blitzed against that Eagles team.
Thank you very much, Eric. Associate Editor Arthur Arkush joins us. Arthur, the Colts situation. Now, they've been struggling all year with injuries, and especially the wide receiver spot. But one of the receivers who's still out there had such a great year a season ago, Pierre Garçon. He's been a bit of a disappointment, hasn't he, this year?
Yeah, he has. A lot of people thought heading into the season, of course, after his breakout 2009 campaign, that Garcon was poised for stardom, but it just really hasn't panned out for him. He's been far too inconsistent. He hasn't been on the same page with Peyton Manning. And we're hearing, actually, that some of his struggles could be traced back to the offseason when he really didn't spend as much time with Manning as some of the other young Colts receivers. And it's kind of backfired on him a little bit. Now there's still time to get it to get the ship righted, but it's not really headed in the right direction.
Interesting situation though, Arthur, because this is a young man who spent his off season doing philanthropic work in Haiti, where he has a very strong connection. And this is a question around the league. Yeah, he probably needed to be with Peyton Manning. I think there are other concerns about his work habits, but it's got to be tough for a Peyton Manning or a Bill Polian to jump on the kid for trying to take care of his homeland.
Yeah, it's a great point. He certainly, was doing admirable work going back home and trying to help with that disaster. But at the same time, you had guys like Austin Colley and Anthony Gonzalez who, took extra time, went down to Tennessee with Peyton and got on the same page. And you could see it early in the season with Colley especially. The timing was there. He really looked sharp with Manning. And as I mentioned, just Garcon and Manning haven't been on the same page, even with the late interception that cost the Colts possibly a win against the Patriots. Manning took full responsibility afterwards, but you had to wonder, it wasn't the first time this season and not even the first time in that game that they appeared to be on a different page.
Arthur, one of your teams, it's I think one of the bigger surprise teams, and they're quietly sitting there tied to the Colts atop the AFC South, the Jacksonville Jaguars on a three-game winning streak. We know David Garrard at quarterback seems to be very good on the road, strangely enough, but they've got a no-name defense. I could hardly name a guy on that defense. They've lost Aaron Kampman now, defensive end. How are they doing it?
Well, it all starts up front with Tyson Alualu, their first-round pick, and then Terrence Knighton, who was an all-rookie last year. They're very, very stout against the run, and they've really been triggering things for the Jaguars. But they've also been getting some production now, at least last week against the Browns. They had their best game of the season, not only from a pass rushing and stopping the run standpoint, but just coming up big, helping the Jaguars when they made several turnovers, five consecutive turnovers in the second half. Jacksonville did a great job on defense limiting the damage. They got some help from Jeremy Mincy, a defensive end that took the place of Kampman. He came up with two sacks after being called out by head coach Jack Del Rio during the week, and they're going to need a lot more of the same down the stretch if they're going to hope to make a playoff push, of course.
All right, thanks very much, Arthur. Back with more Way We Hear It when Pro Football Weekly continues. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. And we begin this segment with senior editor Mike Wilkening. Mike, one of your teams, the Cincinnati Bengals, really been struggling throughout the season. Two controversial personalities at wide receiver, T.O. and Ocho Cinco, and obviously things aren't on the same page there.
It just has shown up at a number of times this year, guys, where it seems like Carson Palmer and his receivers just quite aren't completely on the same page, whether it be the routes the receivers have run or, Palmer, misfiring a little bit. Now, this is a team that has been very powerful in the passing game at times. Terrell Owens, from a numbers standpoint, is really getting it done this year. Very productive. Chad Ochocinco can still, have a double-digit catch game, triple-digit yards. Very effective receivers. But when it comes down to it from an efficiency standpoint and some of the mistakes that have been made, this is a team that has come up short in some big instances. The Miami game, Indianapolis, there's a couple instances where things just didn't work quite as smooth as maybe they needed to be.
Well, Mike, like John Fox, who we'll talk about in a minute, Marvin Lewis, the ultimate lamed-up coaches, this is the last year of their contract. They don't have next year to worry about if Mike Brown wants to pull the trigger on him. I've been surprised that Lewis has lasted as long as he has. I've got to believe that seat right now is as hot as it can possibly be.
No contract for next year. The team has really underperformed. This is a club that has, made the playoffs twice in Marvin Lewis's tenure. No playoff wins. I think we know that Mike Brown, the president of the Bengals and owner, is someone that is very patient and I think likes Marvin Lewis. But again, no new contract at this point, and the way things have gone, it's just been a grave disappointment for everybody. So I think all things considered, this is really one of the coaching decisions to watch here going into 2011.
All right, Tennessee Titans, you got Bud Adams, Vince Young in one corner, head coach Jeff Fisher in the other corner. Who's going to win this tug of war?
Well, going forward, that's the question to decide that really is the hot button issue in Tennessee in the off season. It's clear that Bud Adams has said that these guys are going to have to work this out. What everybody wants to know is, can this be worked out? What was pretty clear is that Jeff Fisher had said that Vince Young was going to lose his starting job regardless of injury. And as you know, he's on injured reserve because of the thumb injury, because of his actions after the game, which included him, you know, leaving the locker room and things like this. In the interim, they've moved on for this week in this season. There's not a ton of focus on Vince Young. The preparations for Houston, the emphasis getting out of this three-game tailspin, there's kind of a sense of crisis there in Tennessee. That isn't something that's held by the team, I think. It's business as usual. That said, I think everybody going forward wants to see how this is untangled between Young and Jeff Fisher.
Mike, very quickly, I think the real issue here is Fisher and Bud Adams. Fisher, we've heard rumblings in past years, might have had enough of the Tennessee situation. It might be time to move on. The owner challenged the coach publicly in the local paper. Is there a possibility that Jeff Fisher says, I don't need this, and they agree to disagree?
Well, I think it's entirely possible. Again, 1 year left on his contract. Vince Young, 1 year left on his contract. I think there has to be some resolution here with regards to length of deal and in terms of the future of both of these guys, because it would seem to me, Hub, to be untenable to have both the quarterback and head coach going into 2011 with the 1 year left on their deal and maybe no resolution here. Something has to happen, be hammered out, I believe.
Thank you very much, Mike. Dan Parr joins us in the studio. And Dan, the situation in Carolina, Hub mentioned it earlier, John Fox, the head coach, in his final season of his contract. Tennessee is a situation that's volatile at the moment, as it looks like. And, of course, I would imagine in Carolina, John Fox appears to be playing out the string.
Yeah, Wayne, unlike some situations in other cities, it doesn't look like this team is at all quitting on John Fox. They're, in fact, playing really hard, and they gave the Ravens a challenge here in their pass game. The score would not indicate so, but until the last few minutes, they were in this one, and that was with Brian St. Pierre, a quarterback they had just signed, starting. So it was a pretty impressive performance, considering the circumstances, and players clearly aren't throwing in the towel on this thing, despite John Fox being in his lame duck season.
So, Dan, if the players haven't thrown in the towel and they're playing hard, and we know that John Fox is probably done, is this an indictment of GM Marty Herney and the talent he's brought in, or is it an indictment of the owner, Jerry Richardson, who's chosen clearly not to spend money in free agency the last couple years preparing for this collective bargaining war?
Probably more so an indictment of Richardson, I would say. Herney, going into the season, unlike with the Cowboys and the Vikings who have made coaching changes, expectations weren't really high for the Panthers. They were not expected to be competing for a playoff spot by most people. And they didn't spend money, like you say, and that was probably an order from Richardson. Marty Herney is a guy that was very close with Richardson and was thought to be very close with Fox until recently, when it looks like Fox kind of thumbed his nose at him. So I would think the indictment would be more so on Richardson's decision not to spend and invest in free agents for this team and to kind of rebuild.
Thank you very much, Dan. Coming up, we've got the games next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to this holiday week edition of Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish of the NFL this weekend. The Thanksgiving trio of games got us underway, but here on Pro Football Weekly, we focus on the Sunday and Monday games. On Sunday, the Pittsburgh Steelers head to Buffalo, where the Bills are turning close losses into victories of late. Matter of fact, they've won two in a row, coming from 21 down to shock Cincinnati last week, 49-31. Ryan Fitzpatrick matched his career high with four TD passes. The Steelers pummeled the Raiders to retain their share of the lead in the AFC North with Baltimore. In their victory over the Bengals, the Bills got 116 yards rushing and two touchdowns out of Fred Jackson. But remember this, Pittsburgh is the best run defense in football, allowing just 63 yards rushing per game. The Minnesota Vikings became the second heavy favorite to change coaches during the season. The Vikings fired head coach Brad Childress and installed defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier as interim head coach this week, following a 31-3 embarrassment at the hands of the Packers last week. This week, they're in Washington to face a Redskins team that has been up and down all season. One thing about the Redskins, they have no qualms about working overtime. They played three extra session games this season, winning two of them, including the 19-16 victory over Tennessee last week. Minnesota, -13 on the turnover table, having the last in the NFL. They did get Sidney Rice back last week. He looked pretty good for a first shot this season. But going forward, he should help them. However, the turnover problem is maybe the biggest problem the Vikings have, and their red zone scoring, well, touchdowns are just 12 of 29 possessions. There are a lot of reasons why the Vikings are 3-7.
Well, on that Viking minus 13, an interesting segue to the first game I want to talk about, Carolina at Cleveland. Wayne, believe it or not, the Cleveland Browns in their last four games are plus 10 in turnover takeaway. Now, they've only won two of them. That's why they're sitting at 3-7. They find other ways to make mistakes. They've got an outstanding running game in Peyton Hillis. They've got a real discovery there. But with Colt McCoy at quarterback, they can only do so much throwing the football. The good news for them is they get the Carolina Panthers, who just aren't doing much at all. Keep an eye on the Panthers' young running back, Mike Goodson. I don't know where they found him. You got D'Angelo Williams on IR, Jonathan Stewart nicked up. Goodson's 45 for 220 in their last two games. But the bottom line is that Carolina has problems everywhere else. And coming into Cleveland against a hot Cleveland team that's been close and even won a couple recently, you got to love the Browns in this one. Got the Kansas City Chiefs going to Seattle. And this is a tough one to figure. The Chiefs are still atop the AFC West at 6-4. But other than that outstanding number one ranked running game in the NFL, Chiefs aren't doing all the things that they were doing early in the season. I mean, defensively, you look at the numbers, they're only 21st in total defense, better versus the run, 12th in the pass, 25th. They're 12th in points allowed. They're 9th in turnover takeaway ratio. So the Chiefs, a much improved football team, but with San Diego coming, you got to wonder if they're still the favorite in the AFC West. Now, Seattle, they got at least a game up on everybody in the NFC West. That's because the division's so bad. The Seahawks at 5-5, really struggling to run the football lately. Only 66 yards a game in their last four games. Lindo Mari has saved them, though. If they're close, they'll get three. Hasselbeck had his best game of the year throwing the football, 366 yards last week at New Orleans. Seattle, a much better team at home. Look for Hasselbeck to try and light up the scoreboard.
All right, Hub, the Miami Dolphins are falling like a lead pipe through water. The Oakland Raiders hope they hit rock bottom at Pittsburgh last week and are about to bounce back. These two franchises formed one of the great rivalries of the early 70s, but more than three decades later, they're just trying to hang on the fringe of divisional races and conference playoff pictures. Miami, playing with third-string quarterback Tyler Thigpen, didn't even score against the Bears a week ago Thursday night. Raiders, one of the surprise teams of the AFC West, brought down to reality in Pittsburgh where the Steelers worked them 35-3 last week. Now, it is Miami at Oakland, and that's a positive for the Fish in this one. See, they're on the road. How is that positive? Well, Miami's 1-4 at home. They're 4-1 on the road. The counter, of course, is Oakland is 4-1 in the black hole this season. Hub?
Wayne, St. Louis goes to Denver, and that's not a good thing for Rams fans. Their ball club impressive and getting better this year, but 0-4 on the road. Is this the one they can win against a Denver Bronco team that is really, now they've got one of four pieces, okay? They're terrible running the football, 31st in the league. On defense, they're bad on both sides of the ball, but they throw the ball real well. With Kyle Orton, they're third in the NFL. Now, if you saw that game against San Diego, though, they're just losing it more each week. A remarkable statistic for young head coach Josh McDaniels. The Broncos have lost 15 of their last 20 regular season games. Haven't been that bad in almost 40 years. For the Rams, Sam Bradford, a young rookie quarterback, starting from day one, Wayne, one interception in his last five games. The Rams greatly improved. Can they find a way to get it done on the road this week? That's the biggest challenge for them as they go to Denver.
Hub, when the season began, you probably thought San Francisco at Arizona in Week 12 would be a key pivotal game in the AFC West, or NFC West. Well, the San Francisco 49ers, after an 0-5 start, then won 3 out of 4. Last week got shut out by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 21-0. This week, the 3-7 Niners are in Arizona, where the equally disappointing 3-7 Cardinals reside. San Francisco head coach Mike Singletary takes full responsibility for his team's less-than-expected season. There is speculation his job status is on the line over the course of the last six games of the season. His owner, John York, and his son, team president Jed, have expressed their frustration about the losing when hopes were so high for this franchise. Arizona was a Super Bowl team two seasons ago, a playoff team a year ago. But quarterback Kurt Warner and much of that Super Bowl defense are long gone, and it's back to being the same old Cardinals. Stay tuned. The big games are coming up next on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish. Some of the top games on this weekend's holiday card. Two teams struggling through the mid-portion of the schedule get together in Houston, where the 5-5 Tennessee Titans meet the 4-6 Houston Texans. How disappointment for both teams. They expected a little bit more than this, especially Tennessee, the way they were playing earlier this season.
Well, and they were doing a lot of it with defense, and there's no reason that that defense still shouldn't be strong. Chris Johnson not having the year he had last year, but he's got a, you know, 200-yard games in his last three, and he's obviously still very capable. The team that surprises me is Houston, at least with Tennessee. We know they've had the quarterback injury. Now, Houston lost their best defensive player in D'Amico Ryans, but Wayne, the bottom line is after the 2-0 start, it's like they're roaring downhill at 2-6. You know, they beat the Colts on opening day, and then that big overtime come from behind win at Washington. They can't get anything right now. With all their problems on defense, Matt Schaub has been hot and cold. Andre Johnson's been nicked up at wide receiver. They are at home, and you just have to assume with the Titans, with that rookie from Florida Atlantic at quarterback, that the Texans have an advantage. But the Texans' D has been so shaky, I'm just not so sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure who they can stop, Hub. One of the surprise teams of the season, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, head into Baltimore where they will test their mettle against the hardened Ravens. Craig Heist has our preview.
It's a pair of 7-3 teams that will square off at M&T Bank Stadium Sunday when the Ravens entertain the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Ravens sit atop the AFC North with the Steelers, while the Bucs are tied for second place with the Saints in the NFC South, one game behind the Falcons, who beat the Ravens 2 weeks ago at the Georgia Dome. Looking to this week, Ravens head coach John Harbaugh has a lot of respect for what Tampa Bay has done this year.
Josh Freeman's playing at a high level. He's making a lot of great decisions. They got one of the more physical offensive lines in the league. This running back, LeGarrette Blount, is a downhill masher. Cadillac Williams, obviously, he's one of the premier backs in the league, and he's become kind of a third down option for him, so he's playing really well.
And when it comes to the people on the outside in that offense?
They got four or five really good receivers, including Mike Williams. That's where it starts. Kellen Winslow Jr., I mean, he's a premier passing threat at tight end. So that's going to make you nervous at any time, you know, as far as an offense.
On the Ravens' side, offensively, they can do some damage on the ground with Ray Rice and company. The Bucs give up an average of 136 yards a game, which ranks 29th in the league. On the reverse side, they are 6th in the league in pass defense, allowing just 200 yards a game.
They're rotating 7 defensive linemen through there. Their linebacking core is a downhill, active bunch. Rondé Barber, he's Ray Lewis of corners. I mean, how does a corner play for that long? He plays everywhere. Plays right corner, left corner, nickel, dime. He plays everywhere. Plays safety. Talib is one of the better young corners in the league. It's just a really talented football team.
The Ravens head into this week with a very consistent quarterback in Joe Flacco. He has thrown 16 touchdown passes and just 7 interceptions, 4 of those coming in a Week 2 loss at Cincinnati. He is completing 62.4% of his passes and has a quarterback rating of 92.1. It's an important game for the Ravens with the Steelers up next week on Sunday night and a road game against the Texans the following week. Craig Heist for Pro Football Weekly.
All right, so Wayne, here's the reality about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Great story at 7-3. The teams they've beaten, combined record of 16-43. That's only giving them credit for 1-9 for Carolina, who they've beaten twice. They do not have a victory over a team with a winning record, and they've gotten spanked badly every time they've played a team with a winning record. So this trip to Baltimore is a real test for the Bucs, and maybe not the challenge for the Ravens that we think it is.
Meanwhile, the Jacksonville Jaguars, Hub, we talked about this club, and we talked about the Giants. These two teams getting together, Jacksonville and the New York Giants, we talked about both. In the way we hear it, a lot of subplots going into this one. How do you see it playing out?
Well, you know, the story about Jacksonville that nobody's really talking about is that David Garrard, who was thought to really be on the hot seat coming into the year, possibly in jeopardy of losing his franchise quarterback designation for the Jags, is having his best season, a passer rating of 98.5. He has thrown 10 interceptions, but he's thrown 17 touchdowns, and he's thrown 11 of them in his last 4 games. The one problem I think Jacksonville has, though, that we haven't talked about, we talked about that no-name defense in the way we hear it. Offensively, their starting right tackle, Eben Britton, second pick in the draft last year, is on IR. Jordan Black steps in. He has really struggled, and that's where the Giants are going to unleash that furious pass rush. For the Giants, can they overcome the problems at wide receiver? This would appear to be a team that they can run the ball on, maybe get by, and then look to the coming weeks.
All right, Hub, we'll have analysis of more top games like Philly at Chicago, San Diego at Indy, all coming up in our next segment of Pro Football Weekly after these messages. We resume with our preview of the top games in the NFL this holiday weekend. Well, it seems like the San Diego Chargers run into the Indianapolis Colts every season. Now, usually it's in the playoffs. This time, it's the regular season. And Derek Schultz has the story.
After a heartbreaking loss to the rival Patriots, the Colts will try to bounce back when they meet another rival in the San Diego Chargers on Sunday night from Lucas Oil Stadium. The Colts still technically in a first-place tie atop the AFC South with Jacksonville, but the loss to the Patriots puts them in a tough spot as far as the playoff positioning is concerned in the AFC. Peyton Manning threw for nearly 400 yards and four touchdowns in the loss to New England, but also tossed three critical interceptions. Center and fellow team leader Jeff Saturday said that regardless of last Sunday's outcome, the team is always confident in their quarterback.
He's a heck of a leader, you know, and there's nobody I'd want to be behind me playing. You know, he keeps battling. No excuses. Doesn't matter who's in the game. Doesn't matter what formation, who we got to have in. He's a guy who wants to put on their shoulders and play. So I got a heck of a lot of respect for him, and I know he's frustrated, and we gave ourselves a shot, just didn't come out with it.
Speaking of great quarterbacks, San Diego's Phillip Rivers has been on a record-setting pace this season, putting himself right in the middle of the MVP hunt. It'll be a matchup of strength versus strength, as the Colts' defense has been one of the better units against the pass this year, ranking fourth in the AFC and yielding just over 207 yards per game. NFL fans know about the heated rivalry between the Colts and Patriots, but Colts head coach Jim Caldwell said the team's rivalry with San Diego has similar knockdown, drag-it-out, slugfest games as well.
Been some similarities in terms of just the, you know, how hard fought those games typically are. They're a team that creates problems for you, and just in terms of matchups, they have a real strong offensive scheme that functions well, and they also have a defensive scheme that morphs into a number of things that can give you a lot of difficulty and a lot of problems. It's been a real battle with them throughout the years as well.
The Chargers enter Sunday's game looking to continue their winning streak, while the Colts look to start one of their own. Two of the most dominant teams in their respective divisions over the past couple of years and two of the premier quarterbacks in all of the NFL collide as the Colts meet the Bolts Sunday night at Lucas Oil Stadium. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Derek Schultz.
Wayne, this one is really exciting. I'm actually going to be on the sidelines with the national radio broadcast for our friends at Westwood One, and I can't wait. And what people may be missing on the San Diego Chargers, number one defense in the NFL. They're third against the run, first against the pass. If not for terrible special teams play early in the season, they'd be 7-3, maybe 8-2. Colts have got a problem on their hand as they try and go for that eighth straight 12-win season. They got to win out. This is a big ballgame for them.
You know, I've had a chance to see both the Colts and the Chargers in the last month, and I'm going to tell you something. The Chargers are much the better in the AFC West, and they are the better team right now, given the Colts' injury situation going into this ballgame this week. The Chargers are getting up on their roll. It's an annual occurrence at this time of year. Eagles and Bears in a big NFC matchup of divisional leaders in Chicago this weekend. Now, you know, when you talk about the Eagles, you begin with Michael Vick, who so far is the comeback story of the year in the NFL. Donna McQuillan has that story.
The Eagles are thankful this Thanksgiving weekend, thankful to find themselves in first place in the NFC East, and thankful to find themselves with a quarterback that has turned his life around. Michael Vick is back and successful, perhaps even more so than he was before his infamous incarceration. He admits his prayers have been answered.
You never know when it's going to happen. You hope that it's going to happen. You hope you get that opportunity, and, you know, I'm just thankful.
He believes in his teammates, and he believes in this football team. He believes in his coaches and his teammates, and heck, I love that.
And that's Coach Andy Reid, who took a chance on Vic after his prison release two seasons ago. First as a backup to Donovan McNabb, then as a backup to Kevin Cobb, and then as a successful starting quarterback. After a rib injury would sideline him for several games this season, Vic was back in a lead role, setting records on Monday Night Football.
Success doesn't come overnight. You know, you got to, once you achieve it, then you got to continue to work hard and, you know, understand what's gotten you to this point and never lose sight of, you know, how hard you have to work. You know, the minute you get complacent, that's when things fall apart.
Reed says Vic is far from complacent these days, working hard to learn the Eagles system. Often the quarterback is the first player in the morning and among the last to leave in the evening.
If the player doesn't want to absorb it, and he's not going to absorb it. Michael, since he's been here, has been just a sponge with things and taking everything in, trying it, and then relaying that from practice to the game field.
He's just doing a great job of being a leader on this team, and I think that all that stuff that he's doing off the field and the person that he's becoming and he learned from his mistakes, I think that's helping him on the field.
That's teammate Jason Avant. The wide receiver is part of a supportive Eagles squad that finds the new and improved Michael Vick a better man.
You know, I can live my life, you know, with a clear mind every day, knowing that I'm moving forward and I'm doing things for, not only for, you know, the best of myself, but for my family.
Next up for the Eagles, a visit to Chicago to take on the Bears. Both teams are 7-3. I'm Donna McQuillan reporting for Pro Football Weekly.
Well, and Wayne, Michael Vick, certainly one of the big stories in the NFL this year, but the Chicago Bears are quite a story, too. I don't think anybody saw them at 7-3, and it's a team that has big problems on offense in spite of the mad scientist, Mike Martz, but they're playing defense as well as anybody in the NFL, and with the speed they bring at linebacker and at that defensive end with Julius Peppers, maybe the most difficult matchup Michael Vick has seen to date.
And the other thing, Hub, they're running the football a little bit better now with Matt Forte, and I think that's helped a great deal.
It has. And the bottom line for the Bears is that forget Jay Cutler's big arm and Mike Martz's big offense. It's the Lovie Smith old formula. Play defense, run the football, try and hang around and get turnovers or takeaways, I should say. They've done it so far. Can they do it against a winning team that they've struggled with?
Stay tuned. We've got the headliner and the handicapper's corner up next on Pro Football Weekly. The Headliner, an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. Divisional leaders collide in Atlanta as the Green Bay Packers meet the Atlanta Falcons atop the NFC. Gary McKillops has the preview of our Headliner.
Aaron Rodgers may have thrown for four touchdowns in Green Bay's 31-3 win over Minnesota last week, but it's the Packers' D that's really been making the difference this season. Green Bay, which is tied at 7-3 with Chicago for first place in the NFC North, is leading the league in scoring defense, allowing an average of just 15.9 points per game. Two of the main reasons for the Packers' defensive dominance this year have been the emergence of Tremont Williams, who's excelled at the corner spot, and the play of linebacker Clay Matthews, who's been having one of the best years of his career. Matthews explains why the Packer defense is playing so well.
We got great coaches giving us the right calls, putting us in the right position, and at the same time we got players who are willing to make it work. We got some outstanding players on all positions and on all behalf, so it's really starting to work and you kind of see us gelling.
While the Packer defense is a concern, their quarterback Rodgers has become the ninth best passer in the NFL. Falcons coach Mike Smith tells what he expects from the Packers on both sides of the ball.
They've got a very good quarterback that's operating as well as any quarterback in the league. His quarterback rating in the ball game the other day, I believe, was 141.8. And on the offensive side of the ball, we definitely are going to have to be prepared for the blitz schemes.
The Falcons go into Sunday's contest 5-0 at home, averaging just under 30 points per game. Michael Turner spearheads the Falcon running game. Turner ran for 131 yards and a TD last week in Atlanta's 34-17 win over St. Louis. In the air, the Falcons' ace signal caller Ryan has multiple targets, including Roddy White, who caught 9 balls against the Rams. Although Sunday's battle between two of the league's best may not settle anything as far as the standings go, it will give the Packers another indication of just how good their defense is against one of the NFL's elite offensive units. It'll also provide Atlanta and the Ryan Express one of its sternest tests of the season. For Pro Football Weekly, Gary McKillops reporting.
Well, Wayne, I think you've seen the scary numbers by now. Matt Ryan, 18-1 at home as the quarterback of the Atlanta Falcons. Of course, they're 5-0 at home this year. They get Michael the Burner Turner going. When he scores a touchdown, they're 16-5. The Falcons are not as well publicized as the Packers. We don't know as many of these kids, but they're playing really good football. And the one thing I'm going to disagree with Gary on just a bit is I think this is a huge game, possibly for the number one seed in the NFC, and we all know what that is worth.
Yeah, no question about it, especially when you've got a team like Atlanta that plays so well at home. But, Hub, I'm going to give you – I hate to oversimplify, but really in this league, you only have to look at the injured reserve list to know who's good and who isn't. The Falcons have just 3 names on the injured reserve list. Only one of them has even started a game for them. The Green Bay Packers are phenomenal in doing what they're doing because they have 10 members of that team, all of whom have started at one time or another on the injured reserve list this year. So it should be an interesting ball game. Atlanta and Green Bay in Atlanta this weekend under the dome. Time now for the Handicapper's Corner with race and sports executive Chuck Esposito from the Venetian in Las Vegas.
Chuck, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you and your family had a wonderful Thanksgiving Day. And now as we get into this weekend's NFL games, what does the holiday, the short week, the 3 games played on Thursday, does it wreak havoc with putting the numbers together in general?
It does and it doesn't. It does from a sense that you're trying to look at the teams as far as injuries go in the short work week, who's going to be in, who's going to be out. But from a sportsbook perspective, it's exciting. You've got 3 games, that went on during Thanksgiving. The fans love it. The betting public loves it. So it's a lot of fun here on property.
All right, now let's get to the team that I cannot figure out, and I did their games for 20 years. You'd think I'd know them better, but the Chicago Bears at home on Sunday are getting a field goal from the Eagles. Now, if we plug in that traditional 2.5, 3.5 points the home team gets, the public apparently feels the Eagles are at least a touchdown better than the Bears or close to it. At what point does a public team like this start to get the support you'd expect them to get?
Well, I think this is the week. This is the week that if they can come away with a victory against the Eagles, a lot changes. But you look at a Bear team that's actually had more success on the road than they have at home. They've lost to Seattle at home, they've lost to Washington at home, and they've had their struggles. This is a huge game. Vic does not usually play well in extremely cold conditions. We'll see how he does. He got banged up a little bit against the Giants. They're going up against the number 2 D in the NFC now in the Bears. So let's see how he fares on Sunday afternoon.
Chuck, one other question I've got for you. We've seen this all year long as teams have ended up with their third and sometimes even fourth string quarterback, St. Pierre in Carolina. And now you've got this Rusty Smith kid probably starting for the Tennessee Titans. What does that do to your number?
It's inflated, and the betting public bets against that each and every time. Sportsbook across Las Vegas, we're all rooting for the Carolina Panthers on Sunday. We got teased a little bit, and my guess is we'll be doing the same things with a Titan team that's going the other way. Three straight losses, a lot of internal problems, and a quarterback from a D2 school is getting the start against the Texans.
Chuck Esposito from the Venetian in Las Vegas. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
Well, Wayne, it's been great having the holiday this week, and certainly we hope all of our listeners had a wonderful Thanksgiving. And as always, there's so much to give thanks for. But as we look around the NFL, there are some teams, and in particular head coaches, who probably didn't enjoy Thanksgiving as much as they might in prior years. We all know that Wade Phillips and Brad Childress has lost his job, but what really strikes me at this point in the season is I don't think I've ever seen so many teams with head coaches on the bubble as we head into the back stretch. I mean, you look over in the AFC West, and you've got Josh McDaniel in serious trouble in Denver, and we don't know how solid Tom Cable is. You look in the AFC South, Jack Del Rio was thought to be in trouble, the pressure's off now, but certainly Gary Kubiak's got the heat on. You got Jeff Fisher fighting with the boss. Eric Mangini and Marvin Lewis could both be out in the AFC North. And then you look over in the East, can Chan Gailey survive 1 year? You come to the NFC, it's not getting much better. Everybody in the NFC West is in trouble, other than maybe Pete Carroll. You've got big questions, of course, with teams like Carolina, where John Fox is likely to be gone. So what do we do with all this turnover? Well, because of the collective bargaining agreement uncertainty, it's possible none of these guys lose their jobs. Never seen so much turmoil with head coaches in the NFL as we see right now.
Thanks, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Jets, Eagles, and Chargers radio networks. The executive coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates in the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkish and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.